Bishop Desmond Tutu from South Africa was invited to Howard University in Washington, D.C. They wanted to give him an honorary degree. So they wanted to make sure they had the right fitting, the right size gown for the graduation. And so they called him and they said, "What is your height?" And the bishop said, 5'10", medium build. And they wanted to get the right size for the cap. And so they asked him, "And what's the size of your head?" And Tutu said, "Well, that would be a little bit more difficult because it changes from day to day." Bishop Tutu was pretty honest about his ego. We all have egos, even Jesus. And that's what the story we just heard is about, him dealing with his ego. However, the ego is called devil in among the Jews, Muslims, and Christians. They use the word devil or Satan for the word ego as we know it. Jean Vanier, who founded the L'Arche communities, which are communities where people with disabilities and their assistants live together in the same community, he said this: "To love somebody is not first of all to do something for them. To love somebody is to reveal to them their beauty and their value. So to love somebody is not to do something, but to show them that they're valuable and beautiful. And through your attitude, you tell them you're beautiful, you're important, and I trust you." Well, Jesus had that kind of an experience just right before the temptations when he had his baptism. And he felt this wonderful experience with connection with God. And God says, "You're my beloved son, and I'm pleased with you. You're beautiful, you're important, and I trust you." So Jesus had this great experience of him knowing who he is. But he spent the rest of his life doubting those words, that he was beautiful and beloved. And you can understand why. I mean, the religious leaders were calling him a drunk. They called him a glutton. They called him a friend of sinners, a liar, an imposter. They even said, "You're the prince of demons." Now, wouldn't that throw you off? If the Pope called you and said, "You're a dirtball, you're nothing but scum," it would be hard to say to yourself, "I'm the beautiful child of God." So the people were saying all these things about him, and he had to go back to those words, "You are my beloved son." So we doubt that same thing. We have the same problem all through life. You hear on Sunday over and over again, "You're wonderful, you're invited, God loves you, don't worry about the past." We hear these messages, but then we go out in the week and we wonder, "Am I really that good?" So this is a story about us and Jesus, all dealing with our egos and our fears. So the first temptation: if you're the Son of God, turn the stones into bread. He was hungry, and he's planting some doubt. If you are the Son of God, maybe you're not. Oh, you think you had this nice experience? Maybe you're not. Maybe you are a scumball after all. If you really are the Son of God, then turn these stones into bread. How can you be the beloved child of God and still be hungry? The Jews asked that same question years ago in the desert. How can God love us when we're out here with nothing to eat? Can we still be loved when there's nothing to eat? And don't we wonder the same thing? How can I be beloved when I have cancer? How can I be a beloved child of God when my spouse gets Alzheimer's disease? How can I be the beloved child of God and have all these disabilities? So Jesus answers, it's not by bread alone that we live. Even if I'm hungry, even if I'm in pain, I still believe. I still cling to my identity as the beloved child of God. So the second temptation, the devil takes him up on top of the temple. The temple was 16 stories high. And the devil says, throw yourself off the temple and then watch God grab you just as you're ready to crash. It's going to be great, you know. You fall off the temple and God's going to scoop you up right at the last minute. That'll happen if you are the Son of God, but maybe you're not. What if God doesn't catch you? Are you still the beloved? If the authorities hate you, are you still the beloved? If they arrest you and if they torture you, are you still the beloved? We have the same temptation. Can I be the beloved when I'm not kept safe? Can God love me and I still get in an accident? Or my child dies? Or my marriage falls apart? Am I still the beloved? So Jesus answers all this by saying, don't put the Lord your God to the test. even if I'm not saved, even if I lose my life, I still believe that I'm the beloved. The third temptation was probably the hardest. The devil brings him up to the top of the mountain, and he shows him all these nations, which would be the Roman Empire. He shows him the Roman Empire, and he says, you can have all these nations. You can get rid of the Romans. You can take over the empire, and all the wealth will be yours. Just think of all the great things you can do with that wealth. Just think of all that money if you are the Son of God. There's only one catch. You can have all this stuff if you bow to me. Bow to the God of greed. Bow to the God of violence. The God of power. Bow to the God of white supremacy. That's all you have to do. You can have everything as long as you bow. The same temptation to bow to a false god came earlier in the Bible, in the book of Daniel. King Nebuchadnezzar was a very narcissistic king of Babylon, and he even made a gold statue of himself and told his subjects to worship the golden statue. Worship the golden statue. But the Hebrew children, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they refused to bow down to that golden statue. They couldn't accept his religion of greed, his religion of racism, his religion of hatred. We're not going to bow down. So the king went into a rage. If you don't worship my statue, I'm going to throw you into the fiery furnace. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, if you throw us into that fiery furnace, God will save us. But even if God won't save us, we want you to know, O king, that we will not bow down to your statue. I love that line. Even if God doesn't rescue us, still we won't bow down to you, to your golden statue. They will remain faithful to God, and they will stand their ground because bowing down was not an option. Today, we live in a time when political systems and personalities are like King Nebuchadnezzar, absorbed with themselves. I'm not talking about one person. I'm talking about many people, many people. They say they're against hatred, but they want to roll back affirmative action. They say they're against hatred, but 22 states have passed voter suppression laws and done racist gerrymandering. They say they're against hatred, but Haitians and Salvadorans who came here as earthquake refugees are being deported. They say they're against hatred, but national policies are attacking Muslims and the LGBTQ communities. So in this moment of white nationalism, bowing down is not an option. Over in Korea, in the Olympics, Chloe Kim just won the half-pipe gold medal. She is the daughter of a Korean immigrant. What makes us great is our diversity, is that we welcome immigrants. Over in Israel, there are many asylum seekers from Africa, people in danger of being deported. Prime Minister Netanyahu calls them infiltrators. They're in danger of being deported to Sudan and Eritrea. But there's a wonderful rabbi in Israel, Susan Silverman. Rabbi Silverman is asking other rabbis to provide sanctuary for these 40,000 African refugees. Here's what she said. In the past, Christians have sheltered Jews like us, like they did Anne Frank's family. Now it's our turn. It's our turn to protect the stranger, as the Torah commands us 36 times. It's our turn to step up. Over in Northern Ireland in 2002, Catholics set fire to the White House Presbyterian Church in Belfast. It was one more act of hatred between Protestants and Catholics, gone on for years. But something different happened that time in 2002, because the day after the fire, a Catholic mother showed up with her little girl, and they presented the Protestants in front of their burnt-out church a jar of coins that they had collected from their Catholic neighbors. And then the nearby Catholic church, St. Mary's, followed suit, and they collected $13,000 to rebuild the Protestant church. Today, members of both congregations hold an annual Good Friday walk through the neighborhood. And they said this, "We've both made mistakes, but we're no longer going to fight each other because we hold on to a common love for God and for our neighbor. The holiest ground is where hatred turns to love." These are all people in Korea and in Northern Ireland and in Israel. These are people who believe in a God who loves everybody, a God who loves the poor, not the God of greed, not the God of racism, not the God of power and violence. They will not bow down to these false gods. Frederick Douglass, whose birthday, 200th birthday, was last Tuesday, did not bow down. Susan B. Anthony's, whose birthday was Wednesday, she did not bow down. Harriet Tubman did not bow down. Rosa Parks did not bow down. And Jesus, who started all this, did not bow down. When Satan said, "Just worship me and you can have it all," he did not bow down. You've heard the choir, the gospel choir, sing, "After you've done all you can, after you've done all you can, after you've done all you can, you just stand and let the Lord see you through. You just stand, because bowing is not an option."